This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, we hope you had a good Halloween yesterday. Now, better than the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, one thing about the NFL that we can sort of all agree on is that sometimes when a desperate team is really desperate, they can shock you. I would always stay away from a very desperate team, especially at home, this time of year. Now, not all desperate teams turn out to be winners because some desperate teams aren't really that good. That's why they're desperate in the first place. But the Cleveland Browns were not one of those teams. They're a talented team with a number of good players on it. It just wasn't coming together in the right way, entering last night's game with 2 victories and 5 losses. Now, when I say desperate, yeah, if you want to claw your way back into a playoff race, you're going to find yourself in a hole in a group of teams in the AFC especially that are all swimming a few games above you. But the reality was that this season is different for Cleveland than a lot of other teams in that they are hoping that Deshaun Watson is the quarterback that gets them past the hump and gets them moving in the second half of the season when he finally comes back. And it's Jacoby Brissett's job at quarterback and everybody else involved in this team to sort of make sure that the Browns are in the conversation in some way, shape, or form when Deshaun Watson comes back. Now, that's a big if. We don't know how well Deshaun Watson will play when he's actually on the football field and how much of his controversy is going to weigh on the team when they're either on the road, even at home, where people in Cleveland are still not enamored with the idea of having him as quarterback. But nevertheless, just keeping it within the football window here, that's what the Browns are trying to do. And last night, the Bengals are a team fighting with Baltimore for supremacy in the AFC North, and all of a sudden, the Bengals can't protect Joe Burrow. He was sacked 5 times last night. He can't go downfield because Ja'Marr Chase isn't on the field. And the Cleveland Browns, who run the ball well, ran the ball well. Nick Chubb had 2 touchdowns. Brissett ran for a touchdown. He also threw for one. It was a 2-for-1 ratio on runs to pass. And the Browns now at 3-5, it's still not a great record. It's still not wake me up. They're still around. But the Browns are at least now showing that this unit, as talented as it is, can still come together and produce a win. That's a big win for Cleveland, but I don't know if it's a turning point in type of game. We'll dive into it a little bit more when we come back. We're also going to get into some NASCAR because of something we missed on yesterday or I didn't get to yesterday was Ross Chastain's last lap run at Martinsville to put him in the playoff. College football made news yesterday as Brian Harsin is out at Auburn.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, Christmas carols everywhere now. Is that what we do after Halloween when we get into November? Thanksgiving gets nothing. There's no Thanksgiving stuff because that's what I'm going to feel like now that Halloween is done.
No, Christmas has started.
Yeah, Christmas has started now. Goodness gracious. Can't jump right in. Can't even pause. There is, because I was talking about this with my wife last night. There's no Thanksgiving season.
No.
It's like just a Thanksgiving week, right? That's basically it. Like, Halloween season, October 1st to the end of the month. It's all the spooky stuff. You can decorate your house all month. You know, Halloween specials on TV, spooktacular, whatever you want to do it. You know, spooktacular savings. Now, you can do all that for the month of October. And then there's no real Thanksgiving season, so Christmas just goes, well, we'll take it, thanks.
And let's be real. I mean, that Thanksgiving week is really catered around Christmas.
That's right.
You're shopping, you're checking in some holiday-type stuff, holiday festivities.
Yeah, my wife is always like, and then we'll do the tree on Saturday. I'm like, all right. Yeah, we'll do that.
I know, I'm feeling bad. I still have a skeleton up in my yard.
Yeah, right? I know. So,
get a call Halloween from the HOA season. Saying, guys, the Halloween season's
it's
over.
It's over now. It's over.
Get the skeleton down.
HOA officials now driving through late neighborhoods all day today, yelling people to get their decorations down. Last night, Monday Night Football, the Browns beat the Bengals 32-13. Man, that was crazy. They kept Cincinnati off the scoreboard for 3 quarters last night. Boring, but not really, because, listen, that game was That game was boring because I thought it was I expected two things. Either the Bengals were going to roll or this was going to be competitive. I didn't expect Cleveland to be dominant. But as I said at the top of the hour, desperate teams, this is sometimes what they do in the NFL, especially desperate teams that are like have got some talent. And there is some talent on the Browns. Defensively, they haven't quite put it together, but some really good players on the Browns defense. But they run the ball well. This is what they're supposed to do. Jacoby Brissett is not a great quarterback by any means, but he's not an ineffective one. And last night, he had all the time in the world to throw the football, and he was pretty accurate with it, 17 of 22. But again, they ran the ball 44 times, a 2-for-1 ratio of running to passing, which is what the Browns want to do, and they got to Joe Burrow five times. And Burrow threw all of his passes short. Everything was short. He couldn't go down deep. Jamar Chase was out with the hip injury, so he wasn't playing. And so I guess nobody else wanted to go downfield. I don't know. I mean, it just didn't. It just felt weird that, and look, I get Jamar Chase is caught six of Burrow's 15 touchdown passes leading into this game, but they couldn't find anybody else that could go like go vertical a little bit for Burrow in the passing game. But I don't think he had a lot of time. That was the other thing too, is that sometimes when you're like, man, sorry QB, we're just letting you get eaten up back there, you have to change up the rhythm of your offense. And I think that that's what they tried to do, is try to go short. So again, are the Browns back into this? Well, at 3-5, are the Broncos back into it? Because that's where the Broncos are, right? I mean, no, they're not. But as I said earlier, if you can get the Browns in a position to win a few more games, and if Deshaun Watson is going to play at a high level, and we don't know, we have no idea. He might come out and be awful. Who knows? But he's had a long time off. He'll be rested and ready to go. He'll have something to prove, right? And the Browns should kick it into high gear in the second half of the season when he takes over after the 11-game suspension. But you never know. I mean, that's what I was saying earlier. Like, the controversy surrounding him could affect the team. Who knows? But the Browns are trying to at least not be completely out of this thing when he comes onto the field. And the Bengals, look, somebody's going to win the North. It's going to be either them or Baltimore. I don't think Cleveland is going to claw their way back into this conversation. But they're right now a game behind Cincinnati in that division, with a lot of football left to play. And Baltimore has been very up and down. You know, they've got a great quarterback, but find themselves on the losing end a few times. So, again, this AFC North is still up for grabs. The Bengals shouldn't be as bad as they were last night because Jamar Chase didn't play. Jamar Chase is a special player. The connection he has with Joe Burrow is great, given their LSU connection. They've found a groove together. But just because he's not on the field, that's still no excuse for what happened last night. That was terrible. A terrible game last night. And that offensive line, we thought it was fixed. We thought it was repaired. They let him get five sacks and hurried. I mean, it was crazy. It has not been the most consistent thing. They looked as bad last night as they did in their week one game against the Steelers. And in the week one game against the Steelers, Pittsburgh still gave him every opportunity to win that game, and they still couldn't do it. But it was not a concern because it was the first game of the year. Get some things going. All right, we'll get started of the season. We got a lot of football left. We'll get rolled. But last night, this is where you got to start playing in a more consistent manner. And Burrow wasn't all that effective in terms of getting the ball downfield. Again, they didn't score their points until the fourth quarter, but by that time it was kind of too late. The Browns had already built up a nice cushion. They're up 25-0 after three. So anyway, the Bengals go to 4-4 and the Browns go to 3-5. So a Halloween night in Cleveland leads to a victory. So now we're done with this. You know, we're going to have our top five, bottom five coming up later on in the show. And again, this is the fun time of the season where we're still contemplating if teams are good, not so good, what needs to be repaired, what needs to be better. I don't think it's panic time in for certain teams that are struggling but still very good. I think there are panic time for teams like the Browns and the Denver Broncos, let's say, that really need to get something going. But later on in the show, we're going to talk to Hondo Carpenter in hour three. We're going to talk to him about the Raiders, because that's probably one of the more disappointing stories of the season. Now, the Raiders were a team that wasn't in our bottom five. I don't think I've ever put them in the bottom five, despite them losing games. And it was always under sort of this idea that they were a good football team, but they just found themselves on the losing end. And then the losing end started to come more and more and more. They started the season on a three-game losing skid. They're now sitting at 2-5. Now, Josh McDaniels replaced a popular interim head coach. And Josh McDaniels was liked the second he got to Las Vegas. The players really liked him, liked his approach. And as we've talked about a number of times when it comes to McDaniels, sometimes it's that second go-around when you've had a number of years under your belt, removed from your last experience of being a head coach, that is, it makes you better. Josh McDaniels has admitted publicly some of his shortcomings when he was the Broncos coach back when he was a very young, early 30s coach in the National Football League. He was like 32, 33 years old when he got that job. And now that he's older and a lot more seasoned, he has realized that maybe he approached the Broncos job a little bit too arrogantly and a little bit, it wasn't humble enough. So there was this new approach to McDaniels, and that's where people have said, football guys have said, if he can just rid himself of that little Patriot arrogance, he'd be an outstanding head coach. And it appeared that he had gotten rid of some of that Patriot arrogance. He had been humbled by the job because he had started 6-0 with Denver his first year. And they finished 8-8 and didn't make the playoffs. And by year two, he was already implementing some of the schemes of, you know, filming the 49ers in London, embarrassing losses that really put Pat Bowlen at the time on notice that this guy wasn't working out, that this was a mistake. The hottest guy in the QBs in the coaching circles was now going to bust out. Now go to Las Vegas, right? Humbled, second chance. All right, I've learned a lot of things. He wowed the Raiders enough, and now they're 2-5. This was a playoff team last year that was on the uptick. They went out and got Devontae Adams, for crying out loud. And they have not found a way to be a powerful offense. Why in the world is Derek Carr feeling like he's taking two steps back? What exactly is happening here? Isn't it that when you bring a guy like McDaniels, you're not supposed to be middle of the road offensively in both passing and rushing? Scoring, everything is just blah. There's nothing that they seem to do very well. And that wasn't supposed to be the case. This AFC West was supposed to be strong. Not only strong, deep. You were adding a McDaniels and an Adams to a Raiders team that had gone to the playoffs. You're already talking about the kings of the AFC in a team that has been consistently good in Kansas City, another team that is on the rise in the Chargers, and then the Denver Broncos with Russell Wilson and Nathaniel Hackett. And again, it's not that we shouldn't be surprised when things don't go right. That's the NFL for you. It always does this. Oh, you thought that a combination of that coach and that quarterback was going to work out? Ah, surprise, they've got a losing record. Oh, you thought this addition on defense would make a difference? Surprise, they're getting gashed, right? That happens a lot in this league. So our preseason thought on this division was that it was going to be strong. Who knows? It could be three playoff teams from this division. And if somebody's going to be out, who is it? Where do you see the flaws? Now we're starting to see two teams seriously flawed. And the Raiders are likely out of this thing at 2-5. I mean, when I say likely, it's a big likely because it's very, very difficult. Again, when you are talking about a wild card berth where maybe 10-7 is with you, this is a team that now has to go 8-2 in their final 10 games. Impossible? No. Likely? Very unlikely. There's nothing that they do particularly well. And I'm as shocked as anybody because I really was buying the Josh McDaniels stock. I didn't like him in Denver. I covered him in Denver. Look, when you're a new coach, when you go into a system, a team, you want to strip everything down of what was there. And there is no question about it. He was coming in to replace Mike Shanahan, and that was what he was supposed to do. He was supposed to take everything and say, we're done with all of this. We're not leaving anything. I'm not going to leave any remnants of a two-time Super Bowl champion because this is my football team. I'm not going to borrow anything from him. And that's what he did. And in this situation, he was almost like a late arrival to captain a really good ship. Right? Rick Bisacci and John Gruden last year had gotten a team that enough wins just to get to the finish line. And then when they get to the finish line, looked pretty good against Cincinnati in the loss to the Bengals. That was a 7-point game, and they went back and forth with the Bengals. All right, stepping stone in the right direction. Now he has not captained this ship at all, sitting at 2-5. All right, we'll get more into the NFL, but coming up, I want to talk some NASCAR because we spent a lot of time yesterday discussing the league and the games from Sunday, but missing in all of the action from the weekend was a race at Martinsville that has everybody blown away and had particularly one driver and how he rode that last lap. We'll talk about that next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call. Hope you all got your candy from your kids, if you have kids. If you don't have kids, I hope you got candy. I got plenty left over. Couldn't get people to come down to my cul-de-sac last night as much as we did the year before. I don't know what it was. We had lights on. We stood outside. Welcoming. I was actually yelling to people as they were walking on the street ahead of us, and I was like, "We have candy down here." Nobody was coming down. Well, they finally did, but we still have a lot left over, so we're just gonna, I guess, give it away. We overbought this year because last year, I guess, because it was on a Sunday, maybe more people were out. I don't know. We overbought candy for Halloween this year. So, but nevertheless, Halloween has come and gone. Now it is time for the Christmas holidays. You'll start seeing that pop up. All right, so I wanted to get to this NASCAR story yesterday, but I didn't because we spent a lot of time on Mondays talking about the NFL and even like whatever's going on in college. But Ross Chastain is in the news, and it's one of those transition stories that goes beyond just the sport. It's now like infiltrated outside of the sort of NASCAR bubble that it's in. And I'll give you the dynamics of it. So NASCAR has a playoff system. And in the playoff system, they have rounds. So at the beginning of the playoffs, they have 10 races that are in the postseason. And at the beginning of the playoffs, they have 16 drivers that are all have qualified for the playoffs. And you can qualify in a couple of ways. If you win a race during its regular season, you qualify. And if you are in the points in the top 16, so let's say you don't win a race, but they don't have 16 race winners, those who are in the points who haven't won races, you get in. So every single round, there are three races, and if you win a race within the round, you advance to the next round, and if you don't, they take the drivers with the highest points total. So four drivers are eliminated after the first three races to leave 12. Four more drivers are eliminated after the next three races, and that leaves 8. And then at the end of round 3, which is where Martinsville was yesterday, there are four more drivers that are eliminated, and it leaves 4. And only those 4 can compete for the championship. Now, all the drivers are going to go to Phoenix, but only those 4 are going to be competing in Phoenix for a right to claim the title. So Joey Logano had already gotten in, and it looked like Christopher Bell was going to be in for automatically by winning at Martinsville. So it left Chase Briscoe, who led all drivers with wins during the regular season, and then Ross Chastain. And Ross Chastain found himself just too far back on the final lap at Martinsville, which is a half a mile track. And he decided that he needed to move up the field and move up the field quickly. So he took the car to the outside lane where the wall is, put it in gear, and just high-sped it around the outside part of the wall, moving past teams and cars and getting the necessary fourth-place finish it took to get to the championship. So it was one of those eye-opening video game moves that you might have seen, like if you've ever played a NASCAR video game where you had, I don't know, damage off, and you were just like, I'm going to fly around the racetrack and just bang into everything. That's basically what he did. He just banged up his car. He ran along the wall. He ran it at high speed, passing guys who were just sort of like, hey, I'm just behind this guy. And whoosh. And he got the fourth place finish. It was absolutely wild. And it was one of those moves that woke up a lot of people even outside of motor racing because of what he did. Now, it's controversial. And I think later on this week, we're going to try to get Jeff Hammond on to talk about the championship, or anybody from NASCAR, to be honest with you, to talk about the championship race at Phoenix coming up this weekend. And I am curious because NASCAR said that the move was legal. However, there are drivers who said, all right, look, after the initial, wow, that was amazing, let's slow down a little bit and make sure that we realize that that may not be the most safest thing to do on a racetrack. So safety-wise, it may not be exactly what these tracks are designed for. But it really was incredible, and it was a real desperate move. And instead of just sort of filing along and running at the normal sort of groove of the racetrack, he just went, "Oh, screw it! I'm gonna try it." And it could have, you know, his thought was this: if I'm not gonna make it to the finals, what difference does it make where I finish in this race? Right? If it's not good enough to be in the finals, it doesn't matter if I finish 10th or 8th or whatever. So even if I damage the car, and let's say halfway around the lap riding the wall, I damage the car enough that we can't go any further, well, it doesn't matter, because the only goal is to get into the playoffs. The only goal was to get into the playoffs. Now, I will tell you that this was brought up years ago when they actually started this, which was Americans like playoffs. The old point systems of this is big, long season. You get points, and then you get you just tally up the points at the end, and then that's who is the champion. But we like playoffs. We like the excitement of a postseason. But there was concern that drivers wouldn't necessarily do something like this. I think this kind of came out of nowhere. But there was a thought of this sort of like level of aggressive driving. Like if you are trying to get in on the last race of a round and you know that you got to maybe take out some people or drive aggressively in a sort of regulatory way, that you actually would do it. So it was really wild. A lot of race car drivers from around the world tweeted about it and comment about it, even those not in NASCAR but in other series, because it was that crazy. But yeah, it really caught the eye of a lot of people. Very, very video game worthy. Again, will NASCAR, would it be one of those things that NASCAR goes, okay, that was fun, but we're going to review this, and then later on we will probably ban something like that. But I don't know how you ban it, to be honest with you. I don't think listen, I'll love to talk to Jeff about this or somebody, because as much as I follow motorsports in a way, I don't know what you could say that says you can't use the racetrack to get around the racetrack. I mean, the lanes are there for a reason, and you're not supposed to be up there. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, to me, it's like using a whole golf course, right? Like, if it's not out of bounds, you know, like you play golf courses that a golfer will say, well, it's not out of bounds if I take it over the trees and I go to the 7th hole, and then I can take a shorter shot into the green. And they go, that's exactly what I'll do. So on the tee, they'll aim way left, and they'll just shoot it to the 7th fairway. And then from the 7th fairway, they might have a better angle into the green than if they did on the regular fairway. And until you tell me it's out of bounds, well, it's not out of bounds. In this case, I don't know how you would outlaw something like this. The racetrack is the racetrack. You want to use the inside groove because that's the best racing line? Great. You want to use the outside groove, and even though that's insane? Yes! Like, why wouldn't you? The whole track is there for the taking. Use whatever lane you want and get to the front as quickly as you want. So I don't know how they'd outlaw it. But it is getting a lot of attention, and a lot of attention for the good reason for Ross Chastain. And if he does win the championship, I think it's immortalized, right? I think it would be immortalized.
By this moment, yeah.
Yeah, so I would say, because this was his only way of getting into the Final Four, that if you get into the Final Four and you go on to win it, it's no different than, you know, if an NCAA team hits a buzzer beater in the Sweet 16, that's just this miracle half-court shot, and they go on to win the championship, we go, yeah, and it was set up because Joe Smith hit a half-court shot in the Sweet 16 to knock out Duke, right? Ross Chastain took out his car on the outside wall and got into the Final Four, and if he wins the title, this is immortalized forever. So, I don't know. Just one of those fun moments in sports. Like, where somebody, I don't know, like, we don't see it in a lot of sports where somebody does something so different and so crazy to try to advance their cause.
It felt like it was straight out of a movie, like out of Talladega Nights or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great way to put it. Like, it was right out of a movie. Like we're a director, and you're like, how do we make our NASCAR movie end? And they're like, I don't know, just have them go at high speed around the outside part of the racetrack to earn a spot. Okay, let's do that. And then the NASCAR people are like, yeah, they don't really do that in real life. Like, well, in this movie we will. And then somebody did it in real life. All right. Brian Harsin out at Auburn. Another college football news next.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. You can also hit us up on Facebook, Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver. Love it there. Robert on Facebook, Days of Thunder. Yeah, that 90 movie, 1990, 1991, Tom Cruise, yeah. Nicole Kidman. My God, what a movie.
Michael
what a
Rooker.
Crazy movie. Michael Rooker, yep. Robert Duvall was
yeah,
in
Robert
it.
Robert Duvall
the crew
was
chief.
In it. That's right.
That's right. That's right. What a weird movie that was.
Yeah.
Remember when Robert Duvall was in the garage, like, basically giving a love poem to the car?
Yep.
Weird dialogue.
I think John C. Reilly's in that movie as well.
I think John C. Reilly was in it as one of the crew chiefs, and Randy Quaid played the
owner,
the NASCAR boss.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know Fred Thompson? Remember, he was like a senator, too, but he was also on Law and Order and other places like that.
And Die Hard 2.
Die Hard 2, yeah. He was the he was the big boss.
The
he
NASCAR
was the boss
president.
Of the whole thing, the NASCAR president. Yeah. He was like, I'll take your race cars apart. But yeah, exactly. So,
but,
yeah,
but that's, you know, I know why you bring that up, because the street race.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. That was actually based on a true event between Jeff Bodine and Dale Earnhardt.
That's awesome.
Based on a true story. That was also Nicole Kidman, who was like in her 20s, playing a brain surgeon.
Yeah. A family friend of ours worked on that movie.
Oh, yeah?
He's part of the transportation team. And so he was there. He chronicled or, you know, told all about it, or his wife actually did, because she was there on set and said, you know, they saw the whole budding romance start between Tom
nice.
And Nicole.
Between Tom and Nicole. That's yep. right. That's right. Yeah, I told this story once that when I first got into motorsports, I was not by choice. It was basically like assignment. And I was told, like, cover racing at New Hampshire. And so we had this big track in New Hampshire. And so that was my beat very early in my career. And I met a woman who covered NASCAR, and she kind of taught me what the sport was. I didn't know the rules, for crying out loud. And she kind of taught me the sport. But she mentioned Days of Thunder a lot. She says, oh, yeah, that was based on this, and that incident was based on this. There really was a crew chief that was eating ice cream in the pits. Benny Parsons was the driver. His crew chief was actually eating ice cream once, and Benny Parsons wanted to pit, and they said, no, we're eating ice cream. Sorry. And that was based on a true story. And there were a number of different – that movie was based on a number of different anecdotes from drivers like Tim Richmond, Benny Parsons, I mentioned, Dale Earnhardt, Jeff Bodine, and things like that. So a lot of that is based on a true story. Now, the 27-year-old brain surgeon, I don't think that actually exists, but you never know.
You never
Could
know.
Be a Doogie Howser-like education, yeah. I guess. I don't – you know.
Could be a kid out there.
Sure. Yeah, so – And back then, you couldn't crash your car at Daytona and win. I don't even think you can do it now, but with the way technology is, with the way the cars are designed. But you couldn't crash your car back then and win at Daytona. The aerodynamics would have been so off that you wouldn't have been able to win at Daytona. But nevertheless, it's a movie. It's a fun movie if you like that kind of thing. And what was it that we said a long time ago about Tom Cruise? In those early movies, he was always the best at everything.
Mm-hmm.
He always played the best whatever. And in this case, he was the best race car driver.
Up and coming.
Up too. And coming. And this was also like a little precursor at the time. It was a little bit – people compared Jeff Gordon to Tom Cruise's character, because same kind of thing. Open wheel, California kid, getting into stock cars. Jeff Gordon kind of grew up in California, but kind of was supposed to be an open wheel guy, but got into stock cars at an age, and they sort of made those kind of comparisons. So Days of Thunder, 1990, Tom Cruise, who's still making great movies now in Top Gun Maverick, which is now out on Blu-ray 4K, whatever the new technology is.
And I believe he ran in that movie.
Yeah, I believe so.
I think there's a running scene for Tom Cruise in that movie.
That might have been.
Somebody actually, I remember looking it up on Twitter. There's only like 7 movies he did not run in.
Yeah, that's right. Always ran. Hey, we're approaching heavy weather season, so it did get me thinking. Driving should be an enjoyable experience even when it's raining. But you know what's a worse situation? Because sometimes you're in the car and you love listening to what you listen to, music, our show, whatever. And then all of a sudden,
those squeaky wipers come out. It's embarrassing, but it's also dangerous. That's when you know you need new wipers. So don't let squeaky wipers ruin your great moments. Hear clearly by Michelin Wipers. Michelin is always reminding drivers how important it is to regularly check their wipers for safety on the road. They've even made it an official holiday, the International Check Your Wipers Day, coming up on November 16th. So don't forget, check your wipers, and it's simple to upgrade to Michelin. Pick them up at Walmart today. All right, so Auburn has finally got rid of Brian Harsin, and I know a lot of people on the Plains are very excited about that. Brian Harsin came from Boise State, was 7 years there. Two seasons, well, you want to call it two seasons. You never really got the full two seasons in. But it reminds me once again, kids, that the best job in America is being a college football coach with a big contract, because they're going to pay him $15 million to not coach there anymore. It is a great gig if you can get it. Eight figures on that deal if you can get a deal like that. Now, I know that like a couple of people that I kind of are friends with had made some comments on, like on Twitter and whatnot. They said, well, the grass isn't always greener, because, again, he came from the Mountain West Conference. He didn't come through the SEC system, right? He wasn't like a Nick Saban protege like Kirby Smart, or he wasn't an assistant on some other coach's staff, or a former player within the SEC. He was a guy that was at Boise State, did a really good job at Boise State, was going to come into Auburn and take the team to that next level, and he didn't quite do that when he got there. But the reality of it is how do you feel bad for somebody's business decision if you're going to get $15 million not to do a job anymore? How in the world in America does that work? Right? Well, it works when you have a good contract and you lock in the contract, and there is a desperate, not only school, but alumni base that wants to get rid of you. And it's very similar all across the country. There are similar stories like this of coaches who are not good. They are not going to be taking the team any further. They lost to Arkansas. They're 3-5. They're about ready to miss a bowl game. That is not going to be satisfactory when 6-6 should get you a bowl game. They should be as good as 6-6 with some of the talent they have there. They're on the verge of missing a bowl game for the first time in 10 years, and you have to pay them out. And you pay them out by going, bye, and here's $15 million not to coach anymore. Carnell Williams, Cadillac Williams, is going to be the interim coach at Auburn going forward. Look, I always admire guys who want to take the plunge into the SEC world of coaching. Whether you're an experienced coach, let's say like Mike Leach, and you come in, or whether you're a guy that is familiar enough with the conference, like Lane Kiffin, who went to Tennessee, coached a year at Tennessee, disappeared, went to USC, went to Alabama to be an assistant coach, basically not disappeared because he actually did a good job at Florida Atlantic, but then came to Ole Miss. But the reality of it is that it's a tough, it's as close as you're going to get to coaching on a level like an NFL team where every game is going to be tough. You may not be playing Alabama every week. You may not be playing Georgia every week, but the SEC middle of the road is good enough to make you keep you up at night. And I can only imagine when Brian Harsin had a feeling like, I've got to turn this around, and looked at his schedule and saw teams, A, that on paper were better than him, and B, on paper about equal or slightly better than him, it was nearly impossible to turn it around. His team was not going to just run the table against their schedule. And so I could just imagine seeing the writing on the wall. Now, again, I don't want to, Urban Meyer was in the SEC for years, and he was as shocked to the level of talent in the NFL. So it's not quite a similar comparison, but it is not the same. I would make the argument that it is not the same like coaching in the Big Ten, where you've got probably three good teams. And if you want to throw Illinois in there, wouldn't hate you for it. But the reality of it is the SEC, it's not so much the top. It is the middle of the middle ground, like a team like Kentucky, a team like even South Carolina, a team like Arkansas, that can really give you fits if you're in that group. And when you're asked to say, get a winning record out of this, it's not going to work. He went 9-12. And that's the other thing, too, is that you're walking into a fire pit when you come in to any of these programs, because they don't give you a lot of time to build a program back up. Look, we talk about this in the NFL a lot. Like, Dan Campbell is disappointing right now, but Dan Campbell has still got a lot of room to work with here, right? Because Detroit came with a game plan. And the game plan was, we're stripping this thing down, be a good coach, get players excited about playing here. Let's build something that is attractive for free agents, but gets draft picks excited to be in Detroit, to be on this team. And I think Dan Campbell is doing that despite the wins. So he's got a longer sort of, a lot of patience in Detroit to get Dan Campbell up to. Now, when they get it all together and they find every piece of the puzzle that they want, and Dan Campbell is still 1-6, right, or whatever he might be, then you'd have some conversations. But in college football, especially in the SEC, there's just no room for that. You might get 1 year, because if we fired a guy, it means we didn't like the guy. But you usually get about, and that's it. You better start producing. And especially since there's a competitiveness and there's a little jealousy when it's working for somebody else. Right. And I'll be honest with you. What Tennessee is doing is raising a lot of people's eyebrows as to where other coaching talent is located. Because Josh Heupel, it's one of those, well, would it work at the SEC level? Would that kind of offense work? Right now, the Tennessee is averaging nearly 50 points per game. They are 8-0. They're tied with Ohio State in the Associated Press poll at number 2. They're the number 2 passing offense in the nation. So, yes, it is working. Whether it's enough to beat Georgia and Athens coming up this weekend when we have a real, a 1-2 matchup remains to be seen. Because maybe Georgia, who's given up 9 points a game on defense, maybe they find a way to calm that down and slow that down. But imagine if you're an athletic director and you take a chance on a coach that is outside of the sort of bubble, right? He's not a assistant on your team that you're promoting, or he was not assistant on a successful program that you might give up. He's coming in after a successful run at wherever. Boise State, for example, like in Brian Harsin's situation. But also remember, Harsin is not just being let go because he was 9-12. There was an investigation into him and his program as to how players were treated. There was a lot of mass exodus coming out of the Brian Harsin program, right? So this is a couple of years after they fired Gus Malzahn. They paid him a lot of money to leave, and he had a winning record. He was, 68-30-something in leaving. So the school doesn't have a patience to make a guy figure it out on the SEC level. But again, a lot of it really had to do with the fact that there was an investigation. There was a look into why players were leaving his program. He was not handling certain situations the right way at 6-7 in his first year. So you couple with that. I mentioned Josh McDaniels earlier, and a lot of people think Josh McDaniels was let go because the Broncos didn't have a very good record. Really, he was let go by Pat Bowlen once that taping situation happened in London when the coaching staff, McDaniels, had filmed the 49ers in a practice session. Pat Bowlen didn't want any of that Patriot nonsense on his team or around his team. And it was embarrassing. And it was embarrassing to him. So he basically looked at the record book and went, you know what, he's not even producing wins, and now we're embarrassed as an organization. I'll let you go. So that's kind of similar here. If you bring in a coach and all the players are leaving, and now your school is doing an investigation as to why, and then you go 6-7, and then you're 3-5, and all of a sudden it's like, what exactly are we paying for? What exactly do we have? Right? Like, we can't win games against Mercer and San Jose State and then not win anything after that. Like, go 1-5 since 2 easy victories. So, nevertheless, Auburn will be looking for a head coach. And I'm curious as to who they're going to get. I know that Deion Sanders has been heavily promoted by certain media individuals. I'd be interested if they do that. So, we shall see where Auburn goes. But anytime there's a job opening in the SEC, it always raises my eyes because it's a big job. It's an important job. Auburn is a very important football program. It's a major program. It's won a national championship within, a recent period of time, if you want to, look back. And they played for a national championship within a recent period of time. So, like, within the realm of, a decade or so, Auburn is still a very, very important football program. All right, it's Tony D, it's Ron Culver, and it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with 2 N's. By the way, Game 3 of the World Series postponed last night, in case you were out trick-or-treating and didn't know why baseball wasn't on the television.
I felt like I was destroying a lot of fathers or men in our neighborhood.
Why?
Because there's a lot of people who have, you know, they have their man cave set up in the garage.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
And I was looking at them. I'm like, oh, that looks great, looks great. And they're like, yeah, get ready to settle in for game three. And I'm like, no, I got postponed.
I hate to say this because I don't want to sound like I know weather and I'm not a weather guy, but it feels like the later you push the World Series,
yeah,
the more likely you're going to get this. This is where it gets wetter. It's like this is the time of year, especially in the Northeast, where you get a lot of these cloudy, wet kind of days. So it doesn't mean you can't get a nice fall day, but I wasn't surprised at all that there was some sort of storm that was over the eastern, northeastern part of the United States last night.
Do you think we'll ever get to a point where every professional team just has has a dome stadium with a retractable roof?
Well, yeah, no, that's probably coming, but probably not coming for like 100 years.
Yeah,
you know, because it still takes a while to build, you know, to get. But yeah, but I don't know, like especially baseball. It's like I go to Tropicana Field every now and then when I go visit my in-laws for like down there for the summer. I don't like baseball inside. I hate it. I don't mind. Like I wouldn't mind if it was a bad day and it was like a retractable roof, but like watching baseball in a dome stinks. I hate it. Yeah. But.
No, I hear you because, we'll go to...
A retractable roof is important.
Yeah, we'll take in an Astros game from time to time. And it's like, you know, I mean, it's a necessity, though.
Right. Yeah, you got to have it.
100 degrees with humidity.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. Sitting out in the blazing... like again, you have to... In Tampa, you better have one because it rains all the time.
Yeah.
It rains all the time. I will never forget when I was dating my wife, we were in Busch Gardens. And we were on a ride, and it was kind of late in the day, and we had to leave. We were going to leave. And my wife goes, hey, we got to get out of here. And I go, oh, why? She goes, because it's going to rain. I go, hey, what are you talking about? It's like, by the time we got to the parking lot, I was ankle deep in water. Like, she just knew. It comes off the... And it was flooding the parking lot in an instant. It went from sunny to I'm slopping in an ocean of water in a quick amount of time. So you need a dome in a place like St. Petersburg.